SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Tuesday, race fans. Sirius 219 XM 201. Sports Zone 964 if you're listening to Sirius XM online. And at our website too. And I'm just we're still formulating today's lineup. Got a little of everything today. A little bit of everything. Including one of those visits I really enjoy and look forward to. Veteran horseman that has been, you know, working and in a rather, you know, not anonymously. I mean, certainly in the circle that they compete. Well known and appreciated. And last night, as I'm watching and, you know, kind of was reading some stuff and had RTN on, and, you know, every so often looking down, and Canterbury was the topic, and Tina's not here, so I'm left to my own devices, and early in the card, before the pick five was going to start, and I was, you know, I glanced at the pick five, and before it started, there was just a $7,500 claimer, and going long on the grass, and I just kind of looked up, and I'm watching, and there's a big price loping along, and ends up it being an absolutely thrilling finish with five horses, you know, heading to the wire and coming together at the wire. And Born Force wins. And was 32-1, and none of that is, you know, it's a race. It's, you know, it's a Monday and so forth, and it beat a 4-5 shot. Where's Jordan? And there are a couple other nice prices behind. And as it happens, Brian Aragone, I had before the card was starting, and it's one of the reasons I kind of latched on last night to look at Canterbury, and we've been featuring, they've only got a couple of weeks left, and we've been featuring them, you know, every other week. And I sent out Brian had his analysis and his little video that he does nightly, and his selections. So I sent them out, and sure enough, the four horses that he was using in this Canterbury fourth, one listener latched onto and cashes an $800 triple. So that made it great. But then when the chart and when the details, you know, came up, because I had not printed out race four, I had only printed out the pick five races. So when I went to look, it's an 11-year-old by Political Force, Virginia bred gelding, and Larry Donlin owns and trains. Larry Donlin is going to visit with us in about 15 minutes, and there's no shortage of things to talk to him about. He got into the Nebraska Hall of Fame, Racing Hall of Fame, earlier this year. I mean, right in time before before gatherings were, you know, were over with for the foreseeable future. And, you know, is a name that if you've been playing, you know, the Midwestern circuit, you know, you've seen for years. And he's got a son too, right? Larry Jr. And Donlin, you know, handfuls, you know, dozen and a half, 20 horses for years and years and years, and is actually approaching 1,000 career wins. But this was just irresistible. An 11-year-old that he claimed 5 years ago, claimed for 7,500. And here it is. That was in May of 2015. 5 years later, the horse is still running for 7,500. And he's won. This was actually his 10th career win. And it, to me, it's just great. It's one of those fun stories that you need to hear about and you need to appreciate, keeping a horse competitive at his level through age 11 now. And it's funny, he's a funny horse. He does a little bit of everything. He goes back and forth, the two circuits that, you know, these days Larry Donlin trains at Fawner in the winter and Canterbury in the summer. And, you know, takes a little bit of time off in the winter. He's got a big family. He's got grandchildren and great-grandchildren and so forth. So it's kind of a nice scenario. And I think he's in his late 70s. And I saw one quote where he said essentially what all horsemen, you hear from a lot of horsemen, what am I going to do? Go sit in a chair and retire? And then the horsemen, it's very, you know, they retire grudgingly if they do retire. So we're going to talk to Larry Donlin, and I'm really looking forward to it. So that coming up. And we, I reached out around the racing community and, including his son-in-law, KVH, Kelly Von Hemel. And, I undoubtedly, you know, if I put the call out, for, yes, and Scooter Dickey occurred to me too, to reach the Scooter to get some stories about Larry Donlin. I'm looking forward to this a lot. Rich Migliori, as promised, we talked yesterday that, Rich, that's why I swapped Andy and with Rich, because he got tied up yesterday, working on, you know, he's got the ongoing monitoring of his spine and neck, you know, that from his career ending spill that didn't really end his career immediately either. He was running around with a broken neck for, you know, another month riding, and you know, including a horse for us, with Lloyd Dobler, one of my absolute favorites, and I have said for years it got beat an absolute lip, and it would have made a big difference in his career, in Lloyd Dobler's career. He ended up getting hurt. He ended up hind end issue, but as it turns out, if he wins that photo with, what was that horse? Cavallo, who was a good tappet. If he breaks his maiden that day, it would have been Rich's last career win, because days later, it was discovered that he had he had the broken neck. So we'll talk to Rich about the racing, and Rich looking forward to he'll be up for the essentially for most of the the rest of the Saratoga season on the Fox broadcasts. Bob Edwards is going to join us. E5 Racing. And we talk frequently about fillies and then mares. And you know, as opposed to a stallion, as opposed to, you know, Good Magic, for instance, it's a different story. A filly and then a mare is only going to be, you know, only going to have one baby a year. That there's no modern miracle that's going to change that. So there's not the same rush to. It seems more and more. There's not the same rush to take the fillies and mares off the racetrack, and they seem to be hanging around more. And the, you know, frankly, it enhances the racing product out there, and for, you know, the players and fans, you know, gives them, you know, heroes and horses to follow. You know, and for Bob Edwards, the decision to keep going with Rushing Fall, it certainly is paying off. And you know, you get a horse, and we've talked quite a bit how remarkable Bob Edwards' success has been. It's really something. I mean, he kind of came in, and he's talked about it on the show, actually, in other visits early on, you know, where it just, you know, it seemed like they had the, you know, the team had the Midas touch. So we'll talk to Bob Edwards, and looking forward to it. Alan Foreman is going to join us in the third hour. I reached out to Alan because of a couple of different incidents, a couple of different circumstances last week, and actually into this weekend, where the racetracks, policy essentially has, you know, has been a story, and the two individuals that are involved in the storyline, you know, most recently, that's not necessarily a new story, but you know, the right of exclusion, as it could be termed, by the racetracks, and the story involving Wayne Potts and actually Carl Broberg too, at Remington, where Broberg can enter and run, but he's been denied stalls. Wayne Potts was asked to leave Laurel, and the wrinkle in all of this is that without racing commissions in whatever jurisdiction, if there's no action specifically directed at these parties, there's really no, you know, no viable grounds to, you know, deny entry and participation in other jurisdictions. And there was, you know, the first word probably would use would be outrage that Potts ran in New York the other day, except that the rules in New York involve due process. And so without a, you know, a state taking specific action against the trainer in question, New York doesn't have any basis. They have no legal basis to bar entry. And so that's why Potts ran in New York the other day. and presumably would continue to run in New York. And you know, the Broberg issue in Oklahoma also kind of murky, because Broberg, you know, who's got kind of an outsized personality on social media, and he's being careful about what he says, because he doesn't want to injure his relationship at Lone Star. He lives in and around Dallas, and it's a question that I put to Alan Foreman. I there's nobody better to explain, you know, these procedures, as it were, and what in some, you know, from some perspectives feels like either injustice or justice or punitive, or it's a murky topic, to say the least. And there was a big piece. Ray Pollack had a big piece at Pollack Report that involved specifically the Potts and Marcus Vitale and clients. And you know, based on everything that came out, I mean, this is one of the supposed paper trainer scenarios. But again, if horses aren't running for somebody that is legitimately barred by a jurisdiction, you know, a racing regulator. If that's the case, well, you know, owners can seek out, you know, options, and it's a very difficult question how to deal with this, and you know, these two cases. And you know, denying stalls, it's the purview of the racetrack, and right of exclusion is the term that is involved. So I'll let Alan, who has seen it all from a legal basis, and he'll give us all the necessary background, and plenty of other news, lots of derby prep action happening, and you know, workouts coming out on a steady basis. You can watch the workout session at KentuckyDerby.com and through the Twitter feeds and so forth, and the team will start to, probably tomorrow, will start to get focused. Some decisions. I don't know if you saw what I sent out, recirculated Jay Privman's piece from yesterday, and kind of focused on Rushy, who feels more and more like Pat Day Mile. More so than Derby right now, leaning. So that would open the door potentially for Todd Pletcher and money moves, as we still have this list of 21. And speaking of Todd Pletcher and money moves, and Dr. Post, who awaits a rider. Did that come out? I don't think it came out. A rider decision. Todd's going to join us hour three today. All right. I've been promising a Pletcher visit, and I'm sort of glad that it didn't come off the last couple of weeks, so that we can get some of the Derby stuff in, and as well as Halliday and some of his nice 2-year-olds that are bubbling to the surface. Bill Downs is going to be here at some point as well this morning, Tomorrow, you got, where is it? You got two stakes again at Indiana. And you got state bred action. That's tonight, actually. I'm looking at tonight's stuff. I printed out the pick five again. And the first lady, the Indiana bred fillies, including that nothing but flowers. In fact, you got a bunch of horses out of that stake. That Ellen's, what was it? The Ellen's Lucky Star? Yeah, Ellen's Lucky Star. And then the horses out of the snack will compete in the governor, in the governor's tomorrow as well. So we'll get out ahead of it. And probably get some opinions for tonight as well, from Bill Downs. Last night at Indiana, again, by the way, three favorites, a second choice, and a co-third choice. Yeah. 680, 860, 480, 560, and 1220. The highest price, was a co-third choice, 5-1. And the pick five paid 338. Same thing at actually very similar, situation at Canterbury too. Canterbury had the same kind of sequence. Yeah, three favorites, a second choice, and a third choice. Paid 356. they're giving away money nightly, and in the afternoons. Today, actually, at Canterbury, they've got, another one of those all quarter horse, cards. So we'll talk to Bill about, the stakes at Indiana. Case, I'm going to send you this, and you can get a hold of Larry, and we'll start the conversations with Larry Donlin. And, you know, over the years, these kinds of visits really have been, I mean, people just love hearing from, you know, veteran horsemen, and it, you know, whether it's their insights and their experiences and, you know, their lives in the game, and Donlin, you know, had plenty of, you know, reason to gravitate to the racetrack. And we'll talk about him in just a minute. But I also should mention, speaking of people around the game, if you did not see, I retweeted it from Jenny Reese yesterday. Jenny wrote a absolutely lovely obit for James Pop Schmidt, who died in Evansville last week, and is going to be laid to rest today. And I'll retweet it again. It is just the nicest and most winning description of, you know, of somebody who absolutely adored the game and just wanted to be around the racetrack. And I can't, you know, I can't recommend that you read Jenny's piece. You gotta see it. It's at the Kentucky HBPA website, kyhbpa.org. An appreciation, James Pop Schmidt, and hearts go out to John Hancock and his staff. That'll say goodbye to Pops today. Meanwhile, we're going to say hello to Larry Donlin. And Larry, good morning. Congratulations on getting that 11-year-old around last night.
Well, good morning, and thank you.
Larry, I just was kind of watching and looking forward to the pick five, which has been so productive. It's been a good season at Canterbury. And, of course, you know, watched you as well when we were talking to Chris Katulak during the winter at Fawner. And that's your circuit these days, Fawner and Canterbury.
Fawner and Canterbury, yes. That's what we're up to right for about the last 15, 16 years.
We'll get to your background and your time around the game. You're from Grand Island, but we got to talk about this horse. And I thought it was a unique opportunity for people to understand. A lot of times when you get horses, they start to get up in age, and people think, oh, that horse deserves to be retired. Well, here's a horse that's 11 years old and has maintained his form literally from the time you claimed him in 2015.
Yeah, he's been pretty good old horse. He's just one of them family pet type deals, you know. My wife, that's her favorite horse, I guess, and we just keep him around. And this year, he's kind of having a rejuvenation. He's won two sprint races in Fawner Park, which is really hard to believe.
You got to explain that too, because you know last night was 1 3/8 on the grass, but he also was winning 6 furlongs on the dirt.
Yeah, he amazes me when he wins down there, but he went 1 7/8 up here about 3 years ago, so the distance is great. The crazy thing was it was going to the front. He's never been in front of a horse in his life, I don't think.
And I was going to ask you about that. And Corinos, was that by design, or did, you know, he broke sharp and that was it.
I'd love to take the credit, but the jockey did it. And we were joking about maybe he'll be in front because there wasn't no speed in the race. But I've looked back as far as I can look, and I've never seen where he's ever been in front of anybody early. All his races for me is last to first when he wins for me, and he just broke good, and he just let him go. But the pace was unbelievably slow, and he just galloped along there. When they come to him, the old devil dug right in.
Well, he got headed. I mean, he got headed in the stretch.
It wouldn't have surprised me to see him just quit, because I've never seen him in front. I didn't know what he was going to do. Carino's done a tremendous job of riding that horse in that race.
You know, one of the things, Larry, and you can appreciate this with your background and especially, you know, going back and forth spring, winter, spring, and then summers at Canterbury, the opportunity to see some riders in particular, you know, on the bull ring at Fawner, watching the action, you know, when really the entire industry was paying attention to, you know, to Fawner Park, and between the Dinsdale pick five and everything that Chris did to draw attention and the pandemic, and you really get an appreciation. You know, Francisco Arrieta, for instance, and you know, the guys that I don't think a lot of horse players, you know, ever noticed unless they're, you know, keyed in on this circuit.
Yeah, that's probably right. I know we got so many emails from all over the United States, and people didn't even know where Fawner Park was at, and they were betting it like crazy, and they loved it. But it's always, I've been going there since I started racing there in 1973, so I've been there a long time.
I want to talk about your family history and your origins a little bit more about Born Force, and you know what, when you first plucked him, you know, go back to 2015 and you took him at Canterbury in a $7,500 claimer. What attracted to him originally?
Well, and he come from last to second in Fawner Park, and I fell in love with him that day, and I went over and tried to buy him. He ran for 75, and I offered the guy 10, and he said, I won't sell him, but you can claim him. Well, he puts him in for an allowance race, so I couldn't claim him. But he sent him up here with Chuck Turco, and they run him for $7,500, so I just took him. And I'm always, I love horses that can run long.
And then, you know, obviously you have to get to know him. And going back to 2015, 16, 17, 18, it seemed like when he turned eight, I guess when he turned nine, he seemed to lose a little bit. He kind of, you could tell by the buyers, you know, he was running 70s and 80s and then, you know, kind of trickled down into the 50s and 60s. You know, it's funny too, Larry, how nobody, when you get a horse like this, nobody's going to claim him. I mean, everybody knows that it's a house horse.
Yeah, that's the good thing about it. Yeah, he did hurt himself there a couple of years ago, and kind of when he didn't do well up here, he tweaked the suspensory a little bit, and after we got that healed up, he's actually been probably as good as he's ever been. Or lately, I don't know, his buyers probably aren't as good, but he runs because his competition hasn't been as tough. but I dropped him to 2,500 at Pawner Park, and it seemed to work. No, you know, like you said, nobody's going to claim one that old that's dropping down. So it worked out, and he win the first time I run him.
I see that. That was back in March. In fact, was that the day? I think that's the same day they put you in the Nebraska Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and I have a real. I don't know if you've read any of Jeff Apple's stuff. He gets on Facebook all the time, and he used to be the horse race man for the Grand Island Independent. Now he's back in Indiana somewhere, and he happened to mention the next day that everybody should have bet him because they knew they was going to let him win. And I was getting into the Hall of Fame. Now, I'm going to try to get a hold of him today and tell him maybe I'm getting in the Hall of Fame again because they let him win yesterday.
now they're going to put you in the Minnesota Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's what I ought to tell him. Yeah.
I love it. One more about the horse. Talk about what you do, I mean, in terms of the legs and in, you know, gelding this age, you know, they say, you know, kind of trains themselves, quote unquote, or takes care of themselves. But there's obviously some care and maintenance that goes into keeping a horse competitive for essentially, you know, 6 years as he turns 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
Yeah, I think he don't ever go to the track without being done up, and he gets done with a medicine called pneumatizing, which is extremely expensive, but it really works on him. So that's kind of what we do when we do it, and we ice him quite often, and he's just, you know, he's such a pet. we take pretty good care of him.
And it's kind of a, is that kind of like an anti-arthritic kind of a thing to keep just almost,
yeah,
like
kind a... It's a medication that's really, it's an old-time medication that used to come in a glass jar, quart jar. I quit using them because my grooms broke too many of them. Now they come out with it in a plastic bucket, but when it used to be $18 or $19 for that, it's $59 now. But I use it on a few horses, and it's really good. And it's really worked for him. It's, you put a little sweat plastic on it for the sweat to keep the heat in those old bones and stuff. I think it really helps him.
What's he like to be around? I mean, you know, when a horse is in the first stall this long, he knows he's special.
Oh, he's a pet. He's a pet. He does have one thing wrong anymore. He's kind of lost his sight in his inside eye, and it made him become a stall walker. And but I my clothesline is right outside of his window. I walk out there, and he'll just be walking around in circles in that stall, and I'll holler at him while I'm hanging up them clothes. As soon as I holler, he swings around the other way, stands at the window, and watches me hang clothes. So I think he's a little smarter. He's even smarter than I am, I think.
I love it. Unbelievable. And obviously stays competitive, it's not like he's a horse that it was ever a prolific winner. He just was constantly competitive.
You just one of them horses that gives you everything about every time. Yeah. And you know, he never went to the front before.
It's crazy. Just crazy.
I don't know if you could look back even when he was young if he ever went to the front.
No.
I've never seen him. It's always come from far back. It's kind of crazy.
It is. By political force, out of an opening verse mare, and bred originally by C.W. Mr. and Mrs. C.W. McNeely, the third, in Virginia, and born force, who we saw plenty of times over the winter. And I couldn't help but be happy for you and excited to reach out to you. And now the backstory, because you've had good horses for a long, long time, Larry, and you are actually approaching 1,000 career wins. You're 32 away now, and I'd love for you to talk about, you know, growing up in Grand Island, and it seemed like you wanted to get on the racetrack somehow or some way.
Well, when my dad was in the service in the World War II, I lived with my grandparents, and my grandpa trained horses, so I went with him in the summertime. And then my uncle took over when grandpa died, and I hung around him all the time. And I guess from the time I got out of high school, I had a couple real good jobs, but in the back of my mind, get to that racetrack somehow. And one day, of course, my name was Say There's Champ, which I'd kind of followed as a 2 and 3 year old, was in for 3,500 in Lincoln, Nebraska. I just made up my mind to go claim him, and I told my wife I was going to Chicago. She about had a heart attack. but she knew I was going to get into it whenever I got a chance.
Did you have kids yet at that point?
Oh yeah, we had 3 then. I think I left her home with. but she had a job, but she's one of them that could do it all.
It's
and stayed with me. In fact, we're going to be married 60 years in November.
It's wonderful. And in fact, you know, the family, I mean, I know Larry Jr. trains, and a number of your kids have got connections, you know, either married or, you know, have some tie to the game. And you know, and I understand, you know, playing basketball against your son-in-law, not so good for your get-along.
What, somebody tell you about my Achilles tendon?
Yeah.
Well, it did. I was getting a little too old to be doing the stuff I was doing, but there was a guy by the name of James Klum. He used to train a little bit, and he was, the little town I lived in was Marquette, was a little teeny town with a small gym, like the little schools always had. With the baskets up on the wall too, and he dunked one. And I said, "Well, that ain't nothing." And he said, "Well, a little short, fat guy like you can't do it." And I said, "Well, I'm sure I can." And he said, "Well, I got to see it." Well, for 100 years, I went up and stepped on that wall and went up and could dunk it. Well, I went up to dunk it, and everything went bad. The tendon snapped right in two. that took a little of my basketball career away.
Well, you can. Your son-in-law. You can thank him for springing that on you today, Kelly Von Hemel, of course. And
Kelly's the one that did it. Yeah, that surprised me. I played a little with him too.
Well, you know, I had to reach out and try to find a couple of people that might. You know, might have, because everybody thinks the world of you. And you know, one guy that I haven't heard back from is Scooter Dickey. I just took a shot that you know Scooter going back.
Oh, yeah. I know Scooter well. Yeah. He's a good friend. I see he retired, so he's smarter than I am already.
Well, he might have retired from training. He hasn't retired from betting.
Oh, you know that. He's never going to put that away.
Talk a little bit too, you know, about some of the horses that, you know, that are so associated with you. Incredible LS, Lady Skywalker, and I'd love for you to talk about Exarban and the old circuit in Nebraska. I lived in Kansas City and got to go to Exarban once, and it's hard to believe a facility that nice with such a great history and the horsemen and owners and so forth in Nebraska that, you know, that we don't have Exarban anymore.
It was probably the greatest track I've ever been at. You go over there on a Saturday and you got 25 or 30,000 people. And I believe the fact that with 1987, we averaged 17,000 fans a day and 1,780,000 a day. That's all on track. And in 1995 was our last year. It was hard to even think about it happening, but it changed everything for me because instead of staying in Nebraska year-round and maybe going back to Hawthorne in the fall, I was on the road from Connor Park on and made it tougher on the family and everything, but we survived it.
How many of those Exarban pins do you have?
Oh, a few.
I love those.
A few of the old iron chairs they set around. I did gather up a couple of them. It was a great place. I mean, you couldn't have went to a better. The barn area was set in trees, and there was grass and trees in between the barns, and it was nothing to have 5 or 6 barn parties every night. and you could just drive around and stop and have a beer and maybe grab a sandwich and talk with people every night of the week. I mean, it was wonderful. It was really hard to. That was the hardest thing about keep going training was when that closed up. It took a little out of everybody. But you know how horsemen are. We're a little tougher than the average person. We just went on with it.
Exactly. And speaking of which, I mean, I brought up Scooter. You talk about the horsemen, you know, that you worked with coming up, and you know, there's certainly a couple of names that you know that everybody associates: the Vanbergs, of course, and Bill Mott. But there's been a litany. There's people that don't even realize how many top horsemen and women have come out of Nebraska.
Oh, there's just hundreds of them, but. When I started, I was one of the lucky ones. It's not like this now. All the old-timers, if you needed a little advice, you went and talked to one of them. And they might even stop in the middle of training and come to your barn and show you how to do something. And now these guys, this younger group that's coming around, they don't even want to see their neighbor win a race. They're so damn jealous. You know, we used to help each other, and if somebody got in a little bit of financial trouble, everybody did everything they could to help them. That's all changed.
No.
I don't know. It's not. It hasn't changed for the better. I can tell you that.
That's a fair assessment. You know who were some of the people that you know when on the backstretch that you'd go to for advice with a horse.
Well, I'm sure you never heard of most of them, but we had
that's all right.
Like Polk Stubbs was an old timer that had a wooden leg. He always kept a bottle of whiskey in it, and. I can't think of some of their names, but Jim Moss and J.D. Taylor, and I mean, they're just hundreds of them, and they were all the same, all characters, had their own little way of doing things, and God, they were fun to talk to. You know, I knew a lot of them from being with my grandpa and stuff when I was little, but when I got into the training business, I had to have a couple of them sign my trainer's license to get my
right.
License, and God, they'd all give me, I don't think I ought to do it. I don't think you're good enough. And then stuff like that. And, I mean, they gave you a lot of static, but it was always fun. And, God, they were fun to talk to because they knew so damn much of it. The only thing I'd done wrong, I never wrote all the damn medicines down like I should have. They had their own little medicines. I used them for years, but then when things changed in the business, I didn't have it written down, and I quit using them, and now I wish I had them.
And feeding, right? And you know, tricks, some things, you know, cooking up a mash and, you know.
Oh, yeah. We don't even do that anymore. You know, we used to feed hot brand mashes in the cold weather. Nobody does that anymore, hardly. And we used to work every horse that run 3/8 of a mile the day before. And that's, nobody does that anymore. I don't know why. I can't remember when it quit or why I quit it. We did it for years, but I think this, when we got LASIK, everybody kind of quit it. Because I think we thought we blew them out the day before. We'd take a little of that nerves away from them, which I've always been a firm believer in nervous horses, the one that bleeds. And when we got LASIK finally, I think everybody kind of quit blowing them out 3/8.
To basically take an edge off of them in a blowout?
Yeah, I think that's what our thought was. But hell, now I've got some of them. You blow them out, you put a little edge in them.
So exactly.
I don't know if we had the right idea. But our medications and stuff we used ourselves, the way we treated horses the night, you know, we drew them no hay the night before. We were feeding the hot brand mashes. We didn't feed them the hot brand mash. We just fed them a regular feed. Took the hay away from them. Some of the ones you thought might be a bleeder, you took them away the day before, night before. And we didn't really, unless they bled out the nose, you didn't know they bled them because we didn't have scopes. You got a horse that pulled up a little slow or stopped a little in the race you didn't think should. You put them on antibiotics for a few days because antibiotics help if they bled, and it also helped if they had a virus or something. Nobody knew because there wasn't such a thing as a scope in those
sure.
days. Now you horse don't do something right, and you have to scope down them right away to make sure.
Well, and you find out if they bled, you find out if they had mucus in the lungs.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some advantages, right?
Yeah, I mean, it makes it a lot easier. Before, you just pretended like they did. If they stopped when you didn't think they should have stopped, that's what you done. You treated them with antibiotics mainly. And it's crazy. Now you just put a scope down, you know whether to treat them or not.
I can think back to when this whole Lasix debate began, and I asked Tom Proctor. We were at Saratoga, and was sitting with Tom, and I said, "What happens if they take it away?" And he said, "Well," he said, "I'll be fine." He said, "between what Dad taught me and you know what I know about, you know, preventing them from bleeding, I'll have an advantage." He goes, "I don't know what a young guy would do that, you know, that never had to deal with it before without Lasix."
Now that's really, really the truth there, because most of these young guys, they've just used Lasix. I mean, ever since it started, and it's going to come to an end, I think. Even the first time I've seen Kentucky actually go along with some of their taking Lasix away from 2-year-olds and stuff. Kentucky's usually fought everything, but as of right now, they're in agreement of maybe get taking it away from the 2-year-olds already.
Well, there's a hearing actually today. I'm going to talk about that a little. Yeah, there is. As a matter of fact, there's a couple of presentations and things today, as it happens. Talk to us a little bit about some of the stable stars, and Incredible LS is the horse that really helped get you going to the next level.
Yeah, he was probably the best one, and he was unbelievable horse. When he got good, he really get good. And I had to do surgery on an ankle, and I think that when I brought him back from that was just when he had his best year. But he went a lot of little stake races. I think he went 12 stake races, and none of them were. He made 200 and some thousand, and 50,000. He went up there and won the governor's handicap at Canterbury. I shipped him up from Lincoln, Nebraska, and governor's handicap is something he loved, because I think he went about 3 of them in Lincoln. They came up here and won the governor's handicap up here. But he was a big, beautiful horse. Rex Ladd, who was another real good trainer back in the days, him and Don, Rex bought that horse. And Rex told me that he was probably the most balanced horse he ever bought, and he's probably the most balanced horse I've ever trained. But he was a special horse.
He, I'm just looking, and I see where Rex Ladd bought him at Keeneland. And actually, he bought him. He was hit 384, so he was a fairly early in the sale, and he was 25,000 by Lieutenant Stevens. And I don't
That's
know
a lot
much.
Of money. That's a lot of money back then, though.
I would think, right? This is 1980-81.
Yeah. And God, he's a beautiful horse, big chestnut with a blaze face. Couple three white. No, he had one white foot, and it was a left front was white from the ankle down, and an old timer, Rolf Shaw, who's a clocker and steward and everything else in Nebraska, told me that was real rare, that it was just a left front. And my boy's got a horse called Go Gold, that's won several stake races, and he's got a left front, only one is the left front that's white. So I don't know if I haven't paid that much attention to a lot of them, but Rawl told me that was a real rarity.
That's interesting, and I'm going to invoke one of the great, maybe the greatest from Nebraska ever, John Nayrud. And Gary,
oh, yeah. See,
this is a great story. You'll love this. Gary Siaka told me one day at a sale. Nayrud said, "Come on, kid, let's walk around. Let's look at some horses." And so Nayrud, you know, they're bringing horses out, yearlings out, and they're looking, and he's telling Gary different things, and they bring out one with a flaxen mane. And Nayrud said, "Thank you," and turned and started to walk away. And Gary said, "What, John? You don't want to look?" He said, "Never buy one of those." He says, "Play the odds."
I definitely agree with him. I've never had a flaxen mane that can run. I don't know what it is. I'd agree with him. Yes.
isn't that funny? Talk about that from a. This is fascinating to me. When you're looking at a young horse and buying a horse, what marks, what features do you appreciate?
No, I like to see a nice shoulder on a horse and a nice rump on a horse. I don't like the narrow hind end horses. I like to see a nice big balanced shoulder. The balance is probably the most main thing. And I've always noticed when I was going to the sales when I was younger that them horses that don't hardly ever pick their feet up, they seem to be real quick. They don't, and then, you know, the old days they used to tell me the horse that raises their legs up when they're galloping or running are grass horses. Well, I've come to find out now that grass has changed. When I first started grass, some of them grass horses might be 10, 12 inches high, the grass. Well, I think that's the reason they lifted their legs up, because I've had some horses. I had one by the name of Power of Opinion that just loved the turf, and he never hardly picked his feet up off the ground at all. He'd walk in the sand, and that sand, his front feet pushed sand in front of him, and he was an excellent grass horse. Just the tall grass is the reason they was raising their legs up.
That's funny. Well, the daisy cutters, right? That you know, kind of drag the toe across the turf.
Yeah, and they always thought that slowed them down, but now that they got the turf courses so short, it don't make any difference, I don't think. The size of the foot, they always said they got to have a big foot. I think he wore at the biggest of four, and he could really run on the turf.
That's certainly, you would think, Larry, that Larry Donlin is with us, Larry Donlin Sr., and that's been one of the things, I suppose, in your career that has really been notable. And you know, they say that you know, turf racing, you know, really in the late 50s, Round Table was really the first great American turf horse. The advent of turf and the fact that there's just so much of it now, and whether it's the sprinting side of it and whether it's easier on horses, plus the fields are competitive and big, we like it as horse players. I suppose in your career, it's one of the things that's really changed about the game is how much grass racing there is.
Yeah, there wasn't any when I first started. You had to go to Nebraska, and of course, Nebraska never did have a turf course. And I'd run into it at Hawthorne. It'd be the first place I'd run into it at. And I just loved it. For some reason, I've always loved to have a turf horse. And you notice a lot of turf horses are 8, 9, 10 years old. They last so much longer on the turf.
Yeah. Yeah. It's less demanding, you know, and it's one of the things we pointed out when people talk about, oh, the European, yes, the European racing, it's grass, and they lope along for a while, and then they finish, you know, the last part of the race, they finish with a flourish. That's why it's easier on horses.
Way easier, yeah. Tired horses are the ones that get hurt.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same thing as athletes, you know, if there's kids that don't want to practice hard, they're the ones that usually get hurt.
Larry, you know, I've seen some quotes, and I know that you really have no intention of retiring. You know, what else do you want to do in the game? I suppose getting to 1,000 wins would be nice.
Yeah, I'd like to live that long, which is going to take a couple, three more years because we don't have the stock we used to have. And I'd like to hit 1,000. I kind of thought you about had to have 1,000 to get in the Hall of Fame, and I was kind of shocked when they put me in, but I guess they figured I might not live that long.
That's not the case. And you know, and you've had good ones keep coming along. Talk about Lady Skywalker, too. She made over 200,000.
Yeah, she was really something. She was one of them deals with the sale that was, we didn't even have her on our list. We was at Fassie Tipton, and we were going over one of the barns to the north of there, and there was a fence in between, and I just happened to look across, and I said to my owner, I said, "My God, that's a good-looking horse over on that ring they were showing." I said, let's go over there. We climbed the fence and walked over there to look at her, and bought her for $20,000, 21, I think it was. God, Friday, she turned out to be. And didn't break her maiden until she's four. Just kept chin bucking, and got beat by, she chin bucked three times. Got beat twice in Omaha for maiden 10,000. And once she got good, she went a Nun 2 at Grand Island, then she went a Nun 3, then she went the Swihart, and then she just kept going, and I took her. She went a stake at Grand Island, a stake at Arapahoe, a stake at Prairie Meadows, and a stake at Arlington, and a stake in Kentucky Downs right in a row.
Well, when she won at Kentucky Downs, it was still the Dueling Grounds.
It was Dueling Grounds, yeah. she'd got shut off real bad in the race at Churchill earlier, and on the first turn, and it scared her. And she didn't want to be on the inside, but we were at Kentucky Downs. She was running up the backside, and about right before they get to the turn, R.D. Williams is riding her. He stands up on her and God takes her back, and next thing I know, she's clear out wide, and she blows by him and wins pretty easy. I come back. I said, God, on Friday, you really got shut off. He said, I never got shut off. I said, what the hell did you stand up for? He said, the rail come up right in front of me. They got that, I don't know whether you've been there, but that rail bends out quite a ways. And he didn't. And I'd read in the paper the night before in the motel that a lot of the jocks come in there and walk the course to see it, because up the hills, up and down and everything. And he didn't get in there till that morning, so he didn't walk it. And that rail come right out in front of him. He said, that's all. Only reason I had to stand up and get her out of there. So, and that's probably the best thing that happened. She got on the outside.
I love it. And I'm just looking at it. She was 32 to 1.
Yeah. And after winning, and she beat some nice horses in at Arlington on the turf. Real nice ones. But that race at Kentucky Downs had a bunch of nice mares in there.
I mean, big time.
Made 400,000 or 500,000. I mean, she beat him pretty handily. She come by him pretty quick.
Well, and that had to be a big win for Williams too. He beat Pat Day, Randy Romero, Chris McCarron, and Early Fires.
Yeah. I mean, we was in against the best, I thought. And it was just kind of being she runs so good at Arlington and beat that bunch over there. Pat Day was on the favorite in that race, and we beat him. So we just decided we better take a chance and try it, and it worked.
Well, and you mentioned some of the graded. She actually, in her career finale, she actually placed in a graded stake at Louisiana Downs.
Yeah, and she chipped or hurt a knee right there, and actually she looked like she was going to win that race. And usually, once she gets up there, she would never let anybody by her, and two of them come by her, and she run third. Now, I thought, God, I thought she'd win that race for sure. And the kid said, I don't know, she just let up. Well, before I cooled her out, she couldn't walk. That was her career.
Well, yeah.
That was in the mud. They took it off the turf. And
how about that?
That's the main reason we took her down there, trying to get her graded place. And we got that part of it done.
Really nice.
We didn't get her no more.
Well, you only got beat, only two people beat you, Elliot Walden and Bobby Frankel.
Yeah, that wasn't bad.
That owner, Richard Gottschall was the owner.
Yeah, Richard Gottschall, he hasn't been in it. His wife died, and he just kind of got out of the business. And a couple of years ago, he did come up to Canterbury. He's got a boy living in Minneapolis. He came out, and he said, I'm about ready to get back in, but he hasn't done her yet, and I haven't pressed him. I haven't pressed him at all. I figure if he decides to get back in, and he was a little wild. I had to stay pretty close to him at the sales because he'd start raising that hand. I couldn't get him to quit. I'd have to grab it sometime.
Well, Larry, we're going to make it your. That's an assignment. I want you to get him back in the game. Come on, we need owners like that.
I wish he was listening to this. At least he'd put another bug in his ear.
Larry, I can't thank you enough. I was so looking forward to it, and I know the people are going to really enjoy it. Before we go, though, you got to tell us about Data Quick coming up when? Next Monday.
Yeah, I've got her back in, and that stallion has not turned out to be a very good stallion. But he was a nice grass horse. And the filly's she's not very big, but really pretty. And when I was working her, getting her prepared for the first race, God, she showed quite a little. And I run her, and she run terrible. And it was partially my fault, but they called me out of a nap and said, boy, we needed a horse. We got to make this race go. Can you enter? And I said, God, she's not ready. And they said, I'll go ahead and make the race go. And I said, I put Ariette on her, and I told him, I said, whatever you do, just take her back and make one run so we don't look bad. Well, he takes her back, and I guess because she had never been taken back, he never could get her to run. And hell, she made the stewards list. I had to work her for the stewards. And then I run her back the other day, and then, of course, they took it off the grass again. And she broke in a tangle and never got involved. And the jockey I had on that day said, she ran all over the track, put blinkers on her. So I put blinkers on her for this next one. And I hope it's on the turf. And I mean, I just can't believe she could run that bad again.
You know, it's funny. We've got a data link ourselves that's down in Florida, and he's enormous. He's 17 hands, and we're taking our time with him. And named him after Shug. His name's Claude Ray, and I think the more time you take and the more patient you are with those data links, the better off you are.
She's a little fireball. God, even after she runs them bad races, you put her on the walker, she gets out there and bucks and plays after she runs. Of course, I keep telling the groom, I said, hell, she never run hard enough to be tired. I'm guessing this will be her last chance. If we get to run on the grass and she don't show anything, I'm guessing that'll be about the end of race, her racing career.
Well, and I'm also gonna ask you about a horse that you have that we're very familiar with, and Cave Run started with Owen Hardy, and this was a Godolphin homebred that showed some real talent, and I think you probably would agree that there's something there, and the Street Sense gelding, and talk a little bit about him and his chance next Monday.
Well, I've only got to run him that one time, and the owner don't really want to run him back. There was 9 claims in for him the day I got him, and the owner don't really want to lose him yet. And I said, well, that starter race is going to be awful tough. Of course, and then it come up sloppy, and he didn't really run that much, but they went down there and like almost 8 flat. And it was a little hard on him, I think. But he's doing it. He's a beautiful horse.
Yeah.
I mean, he fits the breeding. He's a grand-looking animal. And I've heard a lot of stories about what they thought he was going to be. And maybe I can, I hope there's a big improvement when we run him next week. Hope we don't catch mud. Hope we get to run on a fast track and see what he does. And this is a little higher yet. He looks like he's a solid 12-5 horse. Well, there's 9 claims in for him, so he looked pretty good.
Well, I'm kind of glad you won the shake, because there's some talent to extract. I know he liked the synthetic. I mean, he might deserve a try at Arlington, actually, because that synthetic surface agreed with him.
Yeah, I know. I'd like to take him over there, but I just probably haven't got time to do that. I don't know, but I don't think he's. I think he only run once on the turf and didn't run well. Didn't do well on the turf. So I thought, well, I better skip the turf. But it looks to me like about 7/8 of a mile is a real good race for him. I'd even like to run him 6.5. I couldn't even get that. I think that would help him. I think he likes to not be back very far, but he don't like to be pushed to be up there. I think he likes to be able to cruise and then come. I'm going to try that. If the track's fast, we can maybe get a little better deal. The other day in that slop, that slop hit him, and he just backed way up.
Well, I'm going to. I got confidence, Larry, that you're gonna get some of that talent and extract it and do well with Cave Run. And speaking of cruising and finishing strong, this has been just so much fun. It's exactly what I was looking forward to, and I should ask you to kind of close. Some people have written, how beautiful a acceptance speech you gave at the Hall of Fame, and talked about your family, and I think everybody can tell, what the game means to you and what it's meant to your family and being in it all these years.
Yeah, it's been, well, and most of the family's involved in it. My youngest daughter became a pharmacist, and she'd never been around the horses. The rest of them have been in it from the word go, one part of the way or the other. And it's been, I'm just glad I did it. If I can make another 10 years and win a 2,500 claimer at Fauna Park and drop over dead walking out of the winner's circle, it'll be completed. That's my dream now. I've thought of that for a long time.
Unbelievable. Larry, thank you so much. I can't thank you enough. Continued success and good health and congratulations. Happy anniversary coming up in November as well, 60 years.
Okay, I appreciate everything. Thank you.
Not at all. Larry Donlin, and last night, a real one of those stories that is just irresistible. 11-year-old born force, and then everything else that we just kind of wandered around his 50 years essentially in the sport, 45 give or take. Larry Donlin. Let's take a break here, top of the hour, and Rich Migliori, who also has spent his entire life in the game, and we'll catch up with Rich after this. Later, we've got a visit with Bob Edwards, E5 Racing, Bill Downs, Indiana, Alan Foreman, Todd Pletcher. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
World's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Serious X.